This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to the Massachusetts State House News Service, providing our listeners with high-quality, comprehensive, objective information about the activities of our state government. Today, we are covering the week of July 20th through 26th, 2026. This program is sponsored by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. This is Paula Simchak. Survivors have spent over a decade telling anyone at the State House who would listen that Massachusetts needs a law to protect children from abuse by people in their life in positions of power, and they say a provision in the fiscal 2027 state budget finally gets their pleas across the finish line. When Governor Maura Healey signed the spending bill on July 9th, she signed into law both a policy she said addresses abuse of power by adults like teachers and coaches entrusted with the care of young people, and another that eliminates the statute of limitations in rape cases where new DNA evidence identifies the offender. I was failed. Failed by Massachusetts. Failed by the adults who were supposed to protect me. For a long time, the law failed kids like me too, survivor Melissa Fares said at the press conference Friday. This law doesn't give me back my youth. It doesn't give survivors back what was taken from them. But it closes a loophole that never should have existed. Former Miss Hall's school students, Ferris and Hillary Simon, stood alongside state and public officials at a ceremonial bill signing at the State House held by the Healey administration to promote the policies. A large group of officials packed Nurses Hall, including Healey, Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll, Massachusetts State Police Colonel Jeffrey Noble, Representatives Lee Davis, John Lawn, and Hannah Kane, Senators Joan Lovely and Lydia Edwards, and Berkshire District Attorney Timothy Shugrue, Middlesex District Attorney Marion Ryan, and Essex District Attorney Paul Tucker. Ferris and Simon have both alleged that their former teacher at the Pittsfield All-Girls Boarding School, Matthew Rutledge, groomed and raped them. Rutledge has pleaded not guilty. He was indicted in March on 3 counts of rape, according to Boston Globe reporting. My teacher began grooming me when I was 15, Simon, who came to Massachusetts at the age of 14 for boarding school, said. By the time I was 16, the law of Massachusetts treated me as though I could consent to the man who had power over me. Ferris and Simon have been working for the past 2 years on getting the law changed, Simon said, but we weren't the first. Survivors came to this building years ago and said what we have been saying to people who were not ready to listen. Every door we walked through, one of them pried open first. The new law dictates that people under the age of 18 would be unable to legally consent to sexual conduct with an adult who holds or has held supervisory or custodial authority over them. A redrafted Senator Joan Lovely amendment in the Senate's fiscal 2027 budget proposal slotted the policy into the final budget, which also implements up to a 20-year sentence for rape and up to 10 years for indecent assault and battery. Lovely said on the Senate floor in May, those penalties do not apply if the defendant was not more than 4 years older than the child at the time of the alleged offense, per bill text, which Lovely called a narrow, close-in gauge in age exemption to protect peer relationships. As a survivor at the age of 6, it's hard to talk about. You don't, it never leaves you. It's always there, Lovely said Friday. As a freshman senator, I sat in caucus and listened to colleagues questioning whether young people who came forward were telling the truth, Lovely recalled. 14 years ago, I had colleagues who, when we were passing that statute of limitations bill, said, that doesn't happen. They're making it up. I was furious, and that's what propelled me to do this work, to find my voice to work on this and prevent this. Lawn, who is among several speakers who pointed to Lovely's work on the issue, said that he and the Salem Democrats share a club that we wish we didn't belong to. I confided in her years ago. We worked on this behind the scenes until I was even able to share my story, but she knew. All of us, everyone here, everyone out there, wants to send a message that in Massachusetts, if you harm a child, you will never walk away from that responsibility and the harm you've done, Lawn said. In May, Lawn wrote an op-ed in the Boston Globe calling on the state to eliminate the statute of limitations for childhood sexual abuse and opening up about his experience as a survivor. Speaking on the other provisions signed into law, Healey said the state for too long allowed the clock to run out on unresolved rape cases. Representative Adam Scanlon spoke about a case in which after 35 years, DNA identified the man responsible for assaults in a Framingham department store dressing room. Prosecution was possible because the attacker had left Massachusetts, Scanlon said, pausing the statute of limitations. But for many other survivors, the same DNA breakthrough would not have benefited them. Their attackers could have been identified and still escaped justice, not because the evidence failed, not because law enforcement failed, but because the law failed them, Scanlon said. He spoke on the House floor in April about the provision, noting that Massachusetts had a 15-year statute of limitations for most sexual assault cases. So even if the DNA evidence clearly identified the perpetrator, prosecutions could be barred because time had passed. This moment reminds us that our American justice system is always evolving. Our laws are not written in stone, Scanlon said. Healey's office announced that she signed the budget just after 2 p.m. on July 9th with a photo of her, Administration and Finance Secretary Matthew Gorkowitz, and Senate President Karen Spilka. Healey did not include the budget signing on her public schedule and did not hold a budget signing press conference, which had been common over the years. Healey said Friday was about making sure that our laws reflect a clear difference between right and wrong. When someone abuses a position of trust, there has to be accountability, Healey said. When science reveals the facts about an unresolved case, no statute of limitations should get in the way of justice. Senators stamped their approval on a $575.4 million economic development borrowing package just after midnight Friday, hitching it to a controversial change to a voter-approved tax rebate law and artificial intelligence regulations as the sprawling package moves toward negotiations with the House. Senate President Karen Spilka's office described the authorizations as investments to boost every aspect of the Massachusetts economy, including $100 million for growth and job creation in the defense sector, $75 million for the development and application of AI, $25 million for downtown and Main Street vitality, $25 million for research and development of robotics and technology, $20 million to support construction for early stage and high growth business ventures, $20 million for community development financial institutions and small businesses, and $25 million to support arts, culture, and the creative economy. It also opens the door to duplexes being allowed on all residentially zoned lots subject to local limits, creates new safety standards for motorized scooters and e-bikes, bans the operation of cryptocurrency kiosks in Massachusetts, provides $100 million in bridge funding for public higher education institutions to help keep research going, imposes a 110% cap on prices charged by ticket resale platforms for music concert tickets, allows municipalities to elect to revive happy hour discounted alcohol sales policies, and automates and expedites the process of sealing criminal records. The bill we passed today will help small businesses cut through red tape, provide opportunities for new families to find a home they can afford, and set our state up to face the challenges and embrace the opportunities of the coming years, Spilka said in an early morning statement. Senators appeared poised to use the economic development bill to repeal the voter-approved tax cap law that mandated nearly $3 billion in rebates for taxpayers in 2022 and disrupted Democrats' own plans. Senator Jason Lewis of Winchester's amendment to repeal Chapter 62F had the support of at least half the Senate, but it was redrafted to instead revise the law before it came up for a vote Thursday evening. Lewis said his original repeal amendment, as I intended, led to some very good conversations with my colleagues and with some tax experts, and that led to the redraft that is before the body tonight. The updated version, Lewis explained, would require that Chapter 62F rebates only be triggered if state tax revenue in a given fiscal year is equal to 7.5% or more of the total statewide personal income reported for that year. He said it was an attempt to be consistent with the will of the voters when they first approved 62F, which was essentially to say if there are years where there is very robust revenue growth and the state takes in more revenues than would be expected based on the underlying growth of the state economy, then that excess revenue should be refunded to taxpayers. Minority Leader Bruce Tarr pushed back on that idea, and the Lewis Amendment ultimately passed 31-8, with Democrats Michael Moore of Millbury, Mark Montigny of New Bedford, and John Vellis of Westfield joining the Senate's five Republicans in opposition. The intent of the voters was clear when they spoke. Their language was clear. It's worked, despite the fact that a couple of times we've tried to adjust it. It doesn't need any further adjustment, Tarr said. Tarr repeatedly cited the tax and business climate in Massachusetts during debate, including research from the Pioneer Institute that put the Bay State economy in the category of in recession or at high risk. He pointed to other metrics showing the state as second highest debt per capita, ninth highest tax collection per capita, 11th in tax competitiveness, and with business application growth over the last 6 years running near half the national average. We cannot spend our way out of the economic posture that we're in. This bill makes many important investments, and investment is important, but it's only part of the equation, Tarr said, estimating roughly $500 million in debt service costs on the $321 million authorization to borrow. He added, as we consider this bill, we need to think about the context that we're in. We need to think about the things that are driving us to be low in business formation, high in outmigration of adjusted gross income, and we need to think about how to address those, and we need to think about how to be more competitive. And that is not solely achieved by spending more borrowed money. Rodriguez, the Ways and Means Committee chairman, acknowledged that Bay Staters are facing numerous challenges in their day-to-day lives, but stood by the borrowing package as a path to less stressful economy. It just isn't as easy as it used to be to simply get by. This economic development bill is our way of stepping up and putting our money where our mouth is our response. As we have seen time and time again, when our state encourages robust investment in its economy and its people, the results follow, the Westport Democrat said. In a commonwealth that prioritizes strong economic development, there are good jobs for all of our residents. In a commonwealth that prioritizes strong economic development, housing is more affordable, and there is plenty of it. In a commonwealth that prioritizes strong economic development, booming industries pay back into our tax base, supporting critical education and transportation investments for our residents. During debate Thursday, Tarr pointed out that the only method in this bill so far for causing economic development is the expenditure of more state money. So let's remember, the only way to create economic development is not just the expenditure of borrowed state money. Letting people keep and invest their own money is one of the surest ways to create economic growth, the Republican leader said. And yes, it comes with a cost of foregone state revenue, but that foregone state revenue is at the very least not worse than spending taxpayer money to cause economic development. The bill authorizes far more borrowing than the state actually realizes. The state's fiscal year 2027 capital plan includes $295.3 million for economic development policy, as well as $494.7 million for housing. Tarr proposed an amendment, which failed, 7-32, with Democrats Montigny and Velas joining the Republicans in support, that would have doubled the amount of personal income taxpayers can claim and expend an exemption on over the span of 4 years. He said the personal exemption, $4,400 for an individual, $8,800 for married joint filers, has not been updated for inflation since 2008. During that time, between 2008 and 2026, inflation has crept in like a thief in the night to steal as much as 50% of the value of that personal exemption, Tarr said. So in real value, the personal exemption is worth half what it was worth in 2008 dollars that could be being used to invest in the economy, grow businesses, and create economic opportunity. On a party-line vote, Senate Democrats rejected a Tarr amendment that would have eliminated the state's estate tax. He said doing so would have provided about $500 million in annual tax relief to estate and heirs. Rodriguez called an irresponsible and permanent revenue reduction. As is their wont with an economic development borrowing bill, senators loaded it up Thursday with earmarks for projects in their districts. The Senate adopted a Senator Paul Feeney of Foxborough amendment to allocate $2 million in economic relief grants for businesses and nonprofits that lost revenues because of World Cup-related security restrictions, traffic management, parking and transportation changes, and a drop in foot traffic. Priority will be given to businesses and nonprofits along the Route 1 corridor and in communities by Gillette Stadium. Another Feeney amendment grants $2 million for repairs and upgrades to the Pappas Rehabilitation Hospital for Children, which Governor Maura Healey proposed shuttering last year as a cost-saving measure. Senators also adopted a Senator Michael Moore amendment allocating $5 million for capital improvements to Worcester's DCU Center. The amendment to carve out minor league baseball players under a collective bargaining agreement from certain state minimum wage and record-keeping rules, in line with an exemption but the House supported, was withdrawn. So, too, was the rider to crown Roadrunner by Jonathan Richman, the official state rock song. The Senate plans next week to vote on a new framework for public access to legislative records, one that follows similar contours of what the House supported last month, but without any of the language representatives passed to narrow the scope of the voter-approved legislative audit. The Senate Ways and Means Committee released its redraft of the House bill Thursday morning, and President Karen Spilka said the plan is for senators to pass the bill next Thursday, July 30th. As long as it's moved into conference by July 31st, the issue, including the House's audit-limiting language, would remain in play for fall formal sessions. Spilka's office said the proposal is modeled on Pennsylvania's right-to-know law and outlines the process for members of the public to request legislative records, including a judicial appeals process for denied requests. It includes 19 categories of documents that would be considered legislative records, including legislation, resolutions, summaries, fiscal notes, amendments, notices of committee hearings, records of hearing attendance, hearing transcripts and recordings, written testimony solicited and received by a committee, legislative journals, and recorded votes. Much of that information is already made publicly available on the legislature's website in real time, but under the bill, advancing in the Senate legislative offices would have up to 10 days to provide it to a requester. The Senate Ways and Means Committee's proposal includes two categories of legislative records that the House did not: a list of the names, public office addresses, job titles, and salaries as maintained by Human Resources, and procurement and contracts for goods and services unless they are otherwise exempt. The House definition included legislative caucuses and their members, but the Senate proposal does not. The Senate Ways and Means proposal also appears to have a more broad definition of legislative record. It would include records made, received, maintained, or kept by the legislature, while the House version only spoke to documents made or received by the House or Senate. Like the House bill, the Senate Ways and Means Committee proposal treats the governor's office one way and the legislature another. But unlike the House version, the bill the Senate will vote on would not merely apply the existing public records law to the governor's office. Instead, it would create two new sections of the public records law, one for the governor's office, one for the legislature, with specific exemptions and carve-outs for each. For the governor's office, the Senate Ways and Means bill would require the designation of a records access officer and compliance with the public records chapter. But it also grants an added ability to withhold communications, memoranda, drafts, or other documents relating to developing policy positions. By writing the legislature and the governor into the public records law, we are affirming that the people of Massachusetts have a right to clearly see our work and how their tax dollars are spent. This builds on the success of this session's rules reforms, which were important steps in opening up our work to public view while inviting more voices into the process, Spilka said in a statement Thursday. The Senate Ways and Means Committee bill eyes an effective date of Jan 1, 2027, but it would only apply to records made or received on or after Jan 6, 2027, the start of the new legislative term. It declares that records made or received before then shall not be considered a legislative record. No provisions on bingo made it into the Senate's sweeping economic development plan, as House Speaker Ron Mariano would prefer. Still, a group of senators saw most of their fun agenda included in the chamber's bill. After more than 20 hours of discussion, the Senate passed a $575 million economic development package late Thursday night. Senators dispensed with almost 600 amendments to the package, including 10 that made up an agenda that a group of senators rallied behind to make Massachusetts a more vibrant place to live, work, and visit. Senators adopted 6 of the 10 amendments included in the agenda on voice votes, and the remaining 4 were withdrawn. Among the amendments adopted was a Senator Julian Sir proposal to establish a municipal local option for happy hour, which was banned in Massachusetts in 1984 as a way to address and prevent drunk driving. Sir pitched reinstating happy hour, where customers can get discounted alcoholic drinks during certain periods, as a way to draw people downtown and remain competitive with other states. Happy hour is just one more tool. It's just one tool where communities can use to bring people back downtown to support small businesses and to create the kind of vibrant commercial districts that people want to spend time in and want to spend money in, Sir said on the floor. He said the amendment prohibits discounted drinks past 10 p.m. and requires fixed prices during any promotional period. What does alcohol do for the economic development? Senator John Keenan said on the floor while speaking against the amendment. Keenan raised concerns with the health consequences of reinstating happy hour, saying alcohol can lead to more people needing emergency medical care, which also drives up the cost of health care. So there is a cost. And so, while we are trying here to promote happy hour and alcohol sales or extended closing hours with the idea that maybe it will help our economy and result in more fun, it will have a significant impact on our economy as it relates to health care, which is an enormous part of our economy, Keenan said. The Senate included Sir's local option happy hour proposal in its economic development bill last session, but the policy did not survive conference committee negotiations, and House leaders don't appear keen on adopting the proposal this session. Mariano called the idea an interesting premise. House Ways and Means Chairman Aaron Wichlowitz said the Massachusetts Restaurant Association is opposed to reinstating happy hour. If the Senate does put that in the economic development bill, we'll have a conversation with them. We'll have a conversation with our colleagues and see what we come up with, Wichlowitz told reporters on Wednesday. Governor Maura Healey has expressed her support for happy hour, along with making temporary alcohol laws enacted this session permanent. The laws, which were created in anticipation of events like the World Cup, 250th American Revolution celebrations, and a slew of tall ships, allow bars and restaurants to extend last call an hour beyond their license limit, and until 3 a.m. at the latest. Also, cities and towns can designate public alcohol consumption districts. Senator Pavel Payano withdrew an amendment included in the fun agenda that would permanently allow cities and towns to extend last call from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. Senators adopted a Senator Robin Kennedy amendment making local option alcohol districts permanent. Kennedy said she noticed a strong sense of community during the World Cup, and people were consuming alcohol in a respectful and considerate way. I want to see more of that in my community. Folks getting together to celebrate cultural events, sporting events, to celebrate time to just be able to get together with friends. And yes, if they choose to, be able to enjoy an alcoholic beverage. Designated districts for outdoor consumption of alcohol have been such an opportunity for our local businesses, and municipalities should have the choice to continue in them, Kennedy said on the floor. Paiano also withdrew an amendment to allow alcohol sales beginning at 8 a.m. on Sundays instead of the currently allowed 10 a.m. The House adopted very similar language in its economic development bill. Senators adopted a Senator Paul Feeney of Foxborough amendment that establishes a working group to recommend how the state can host international soccer matches. The group's task includes coordinating with participating countries like Scotland and nations with significant diaspora within the Commonwealth. An earlier version of the amendment, which went through two redrafts, included $5 million for the planning and implementation of international soccer matches that would make up a new Massachusetts Cup tournament. Feeney said his proposal builds off of the success of the World Cup, which didn't just draw tourists to the Bay State, but also fostered a sense of camaraderie among people from different cultures. We are at a crossroads, I think, as a nation. We are at a crossroads in the Commonwealth. We need to give people hope. We need to lift people up. If that's through music, let's do it. If it's through bars and restaurants and our fund agenda, let's do it. If it's through sport, let's do it, Feeney said on the floor while standing behind a bright orange traffic cone, which became a symbol associated with Scottish soccer fans who created strong bonds with Massachusetts residents. A Senator Dylan Fernandez amendment to cap the resale prices of concert and live entertainment tickets at 110% of their original face value also made it into the Senate's economic development package. The amendment is very similar to a bill Fernandez filed and a proposal Governor Maura Healey announced last week that she intends to include in a future spending bill. Fernandez said the policy has the backing of 40 major New England artists, including Noah Kahan, who inspired both Fernandez and Healey's proposals. The goal is to curb skyrocketing ticket resale prices and make attending live events more affordable. Opponents say it doesn't address the underlying cause of rising prices, a lack of competition in the primary ticket market. Senators adopted another amendment from SIR allocating $1 million for a grant program run by the Massachusetts Cultural Council that's meant to boost entertainment and nightlife. The grant would support individuals, businesses, and organizations involved in public art, performance, as well as cultural and community programming that stimulates downtown areas, commercial areas, cultural districts, gathering places, and nightlife destinations and contributes to the cultural and economic vitality of cities and towns. Sir said the relatively small investment would have an outsized impact. Culture is not nice to have, it is a must-have in our economic development, the Provincetown Democrat said on the floor. In a press release from Sir's office, David Slattery, acting executive director of the Mass Cultural Council, thanked the Senate for adopting the amendment and its continued partnership and investment in the power of culture. The fund agenda also included policies to support outdoor activities. A Senator Joe Comerford of Northampton proposal the Senate adopted allocates $5 million for grants to fund agritourism events like barn paintings, farm stands, and farmers markets, murals and public art, as well as signage and other marketing materials promoting agricultural destinations. That's half of the amendment's originally proposed $10 million. Comerford said the Senate allocated another $5 million for supporting food business innovation in a separate amendment, so it's still $10 million overall added for agricultural businesses. It's looking at helping farms stay farming through agritourism or microbusinesses related to agritourism, and then it's looking to help farms stay farming through food science, food innovation-related startups, Comerford told the News Service Friday. Comerford withdrew two pieces of the fund agenda, one to create a Massachusetts Trail Access Fund that's meant to promote access to outdoor trails for people of all ability levels, and another codifying the use of outdoor recreation in state law. Comerford said the Senate's environmental bond bill included funding for making trails more accessible, and the Massachusetts Trail Access Fund wasn't mission critical to include in the economic development bill. The Northampton Democrat said she plans to reintroduce both policies as she withdrew. Now, the Senate's fund agenda and overall economic development package is destined for a conference committee. Negotiators have a wide gap to bridge between the different policies and spending each chamber is proposing. Senators will add their own proposed framework for public access to legislative records to the mix next week, one that follows similar contours of what the House supported last month, but without any of the language representatives passed to narrow the scope of the voter-approved legislative audit. The Senate Ways and Means Committee released its redraft of the House bill Thursday morning, and President Karen Spilka said the plan is for senators to pass the bill on Thursday, July 30th. As long as it's moved into conference by July 31st, the issue, including the House's audit-limiting language, can remain in play for formal sessions later this year, as voters also decide the fate of a related public records access ballot question on November 3rd. The bill's passage through the Senate appears inevitable. It cleared Ways and Means with 15 members, all Democrats, voting in favor, no votes against, and three Republicans opting against voting yes or no. Spilka's office said the proposal is modeled on Pennsylvania's Right to Know law and outlines a process for members of the public to request legislative records, including a judicial appeals process for denied requests. It includes 19 categories of documents that would be considered legislative records, including legislation, resolutions, summaries, fiscal notes, amendments, notices of committee hearings, records of hearing attendance, fiscal transcripts and recordings, written testimony solicited and received by a committee, legislative journals, recorded votes, and ethics disclosures. Much of that information is already informally considered to be public records and is made publicly available on the legislature's website in real time. But under the bill advancing in the Senate, legislative offices would have to have up to 10 business days to provide it to a requester. The Senate Ways and Means Committee's proposal includes two categories of legislative records that the House did not: a list of the names, public office addresses, job titles, and salaries as maintained by Human Resources, and procurement and contracts for goods and services, unless they are otherwise exempt. The House definition included legislative caucuses and their members, but the Senate proposal does not. The Senate Ways and Means proposal also appears to have a more broad definition of legislative record. It would include records made, received, maintained, or kept by the legislature, while the House version only spoke to documents made or received by the House or Senate. Like the House bill, the Senate Ways and Means Committee proposal treats the governor's office one way and the legislature another. But unlike the House version, the bill the Senate will vote on would not simply apply the existing public records law to the governor's office. Instead, it would create two new parts of the public records law: new subscriptions specific to the governor's office, and an entire section for the legislature, with specific exemptions and carve-outs for each. For the governor's office, the Senate Ways and Means bill would require the designation of a records access officer and compliance with the public records chapter. But it also grants an added ability for the executive to withhold communications, memoranda, drafts, or other documents relating to developing policy positions. By writing the legislature and the governor into the public records law, we are affirming that the people of Massachusetts have a right to clearly see our work and how their tax dollars are spent. This builds on the success of this session's rules reforms, which were important steps in opening up our work to public view while inviting more voices into the process, Spilka said in a statement Thursday. The branches also take different approaches to appeals in cases when someone is unhappy with the response to their records request. Under the bill advancing in the Senate, an aggrieved requester could appeal the decision of the House or Senate Records Access Officer. First, the requester could ask for a reconsideration, which would require a written statement of the reasons for the denial be shared also with the branch's Rules Committee. The Rules Committee could reverse or modify the Records Access Officer's decision. After that, a denied requester could appeal to the Superior Court. The House version would direct appeals to the Supreme Judicial Court. The bill expected to pass the Senate earned plaudits from the same advocates who praised the House version: Common Cause Massachusetts Executive Director Jeff Foster, Massachusetts Newspaper Publishers Association Executive Director Robert Ambrosi, and the ACLU of Massachusetts Executive Director Carol Rose. We strongly support the Senate's thoughtful bill and appreciate the legislature taking necessary steps to improve transparency within a framework that is legally defensible. This historic expansion of our public records law builds on proposals that we and fellow advocates have long promoted, and we look forward to seeing it enacted into law, Rose said. You've been listening to an episode of the Massachusetts State House News Service, a program produced by Audio Journal and sponsored by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. This is Paula Simchak. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more informative programming by Audio Journal.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
You are listening to Audio Journal, part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Thanks for listening. We have more programming coming up next.